From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show, and I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of today's show. The rest of today's show is available for download and on-demand listening at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome to my show. One of the world's largest urban oil spills is in New York City, just below Newtown Creek in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. It's millions of gallons bigger than the Exxon Valdez spill, and yet it has gone largely overlooked until recently. Residents of Greenpoint have initiated a civil suit against ExxonMobil, BP Amoco, and Chevron Texaco. And joining me now are Basil Segos, chief investigator for the environmental organization Riverkeeper, and city council member David Yasky. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So how long is Newtown Creek? Is this a real creek running through a section of Brooklyn?
It is a real creek. It's a 3.5-mile long tidal tributary. I mean, it used to be...
That's a long creek.
It's a long creek. It used to be, you know, a huge functioning tidal estuary until it was filled in over the years. But, you know, still receives some flow from the East River. Most of the flow out of the creek today is raw sewage.
Mm. And city sewage plant. Is that what its main use is, or is it
sewage
also served a business function?
It does serve a business function, although it's disappearing. I mean, we're seeing, you know, the industries in the area folding up shop, 24 in 1990 and really, you know, 10 today. So the creek is really not being used as it should.
But they're not closing up shop because of the oil spill.
Not because of the oil spill, perhaps, but you have to remember that this oil spill is 55 acres. Many of the parcels now that are burdened by this spill cannot be used until this stuff is pumped out.
David, are there any residential areas near this creek?
There absolutely are.
Waterfront property?
More and more so. First of all, there are a lot of areas covered where the spill is underneath the ground that used to be industrial, now are residential. And there are a lot that are going to be residential in the very near future. We just finished a waterfront development plan for all of North Brooklyn that includes the waterfront in Greenpoint that the mayor predicts some 10,000 new apartments will be built. That's right in the area. Much of that is in the area of the spill.
I would worry about living over this spill, but we'll get into that later. When was it first discovered?
Well, it was really the Coast Guard in 78 doing a routine flyover that they discovered this big seep essentially coming out into Newtown Creek and spent a year and maybe $500,000 to study where it was coming from. And they tracked it all the way back. I mean, this is 3/4 of a mile now inland. They tracked it all the way back to the historic Greenpoint Oil Terminal, which was, you know, Rockefeller's original refinery.
And the original spill occurred a lot earlier, didn't it? Almost 20 years before that.
Well, it was 1950 when there was a huge explosion that rocked Brooklyn. It was thought of at that time that explosion probably facilitated the transport of oil underground. But in all likelihood, this spill probably existed, you know, from the 1920s or even before that and just was constantly added to over time.
Yeah, Leonard, look, the truth is there's an estimated or about 17 million gallons of oil that were released over a period of time. As Basil says, maybe as far back as the 20s.
Wait, 17 million gallons and nobody noticed? I mean, wouldn't the oil companies have been concerned at all of that loss?
I think there's no question that had you asked, you know, Standard Oil or Exxon or whatever the company was called different times, is there oil under the ground there that's been released, they would have said yes. The truth is, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, they didn't care. First of all, oil was plentiful, and losing a little bit was okay, and actually was quite common. Now, oil companies do take great care to make sure that they don't.
Yeah, well, this facility was processing 300 million gallons of oil a year, and you know they stored this stuff temporarily in these tanks, which were rivet and steel tanks, which were notoriously leaking and set on their side. So this stuff probably was leaking out for decades, and was allowed essentially.
Yeah. So, but I just want to say, you said, you know, didn't the oil companies know? Yes, of course they did, and that's part of the reason.
And you would have thought they didn't want to lose all of that oil, even if it were plentiful. It still was that was their business. It was their product.
You know, I've talked with people at the companies who've told me internally about how dramatic the shift has been. That, you know, even as recently as 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't a business issue to be losing the oil, although it was beginning to dawn on people it was an environmental issue. And now they recognize it as the business issue that it is.
But were environmental threats as much of a concern in the 50s as they are today?
No, I think this tells you so much about the growth of the modern environmental movement. You know, in 1950, when the big explosion was, which people knew all around, if that happened today, you'd have folks like Riverkeeper here immediately to say, what's the environmental damage? The truth is, there was not environmental consciousness then, and people just let it pass.
But what about the other aspect? This is in Greenpoint. It's not in a pristine area of Alaska. And even though the Exxon Valdez spill is teeny in comparison to this, we had all those dramatic photographs of pristine landscape being suffused in oil, of animals being covered in oil. Do urban environmental problems tend to go overlooked?
Oh, without question. And I'll tell you, it was Riverkeeper in 2002. We took our boat up Newtown Creek for the first time in our history, in almost a 40-year history, and came upon this huge oil spill. Saw oil literally seeping out, rainbow sheens and free product and crude. And it took basically a year for us to accumulate enough evidence to determine what the problem was. There was nothing on record. No one was on this creek. Nobody was walking around this community asking questions. These people had been literally dumped upon for generations and had not become accustomed to asking questions. There are maybe a handful of people that were leading the charge, and very quietly.
My guests are Basil Segos of Riverkeeper and City Council member David Yaske. We're talking about the oil spill in Greenpoint. Well, so it occurred a half mile, you say, away from the creek, and that means that it's been traveling under people's homes, under businesses, getting into the aquifer, I assume?
Oh, it is the aquifer in this area. I mean, the funny thing is, the company calls this a free product plume. And what that means is it's not a spill. It's floating oil in the aquifer. It's displaced all the water.
Couldn't somebody just drill and make it into a mini Texas?
That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. They don't. They call this a free product plume. They drill into it and are pumping this stuff out right now, thankfully, due to the DEC's, DEC action in 1990. That wasn't enough. But they're pumping this stuff out and shipping it off to New Jersey for refining and resale.
How polluted is Newtown Creek in comparison with other bodies of water in the area, for example, the Gowanus Canal?
Well, you're picking another very, very highly polluted waterway.
Says Newtown something about Creek Brooklyn, do you think?
Well, it does. It says something about the industrial past, absolutely. Newtown Creek is one of the worst, most polluted waterways in New York City. It was, a few years ago, virtually dead, and no life could sustain itself, thanks in part to the efforts of Riverkeeper and the community folks that are trying to clean up. It's come back a little tiny bit. It's starting to, but it's still the site, number one, of this oil plume, and number two, the city itself releases millions of gallons of raw sewage.
More than that, 2.7 billion. And that's the problem, really.
Into it, and it doesn't really flow into the East River the way it was supposed to?
Well, it does. And in fact, we've traced the flow of contaminants around Newtown Creek and out into the East River and around the harbor. We found that most of the stuff, after a week, maybe 70% of it, remains in the creek, flushing back and forth. But that 30% that gets out gets everywhere. In 8 or 10 hours, it's down to the Verrazano, and out into Long Island Sound and up the Hudson.
And what is supposed, this is, we're talking about when we flush our toilets, it's going into the creek?
Unfortunately, yes.
What was supposed to happen to that stuff? Is it just supposed to dissolve into the environment?
Well, if it rains, more than a tenth of an inch in some cases, the entire system overloads in New York City because of its combined nature. And you have, raw sewage, industrial waste that's been dumped into the sewer lines, essentially flowing into this creek.
David, do you think that one of the reasons that it has been overlooked is that it happened in a working class, largely immigrant neighborhood like Greenpoint?
I think that's part of it. I think the industrial nature of the neighborhood, really, to me, is the biggest factor.
People, but there's been industry in the Upper East Side, and there are plants, Con Ed plants, and there used to be a beer company up there. If something like this had happened in the Upper East Side, do you think that it might have been taken care of?
Look, I think if there was a spill on the East, seeping out into the East River in the East 70s and 80s, it would, without question, attract much more attention.
So how has it affected residents? Is this toxic at all, Basil?
No question about it. I mean, this spill, this is everything from whale oil to crude oil to refined diesel. And it's been seeping underneath people's homes for generations. Let's leave behind Newtown Creek for a second and just talk about, the vapors that are being produced by this spill.
And can you smell it when you walk down the neighborhood?
You can. You may not know where it's from because you look around. Maybe you see an oil tank, a mile down the street, or you see the BQE right nearby. But you can smell something happening in that neighborhood. And we are now learning, based on our investigation this summer, that methane and benzene are being produced from the spill, wafting up through the sandy soils and into people's backyards and potentially into their basements. And these levels are nothing to be trifled with. I mean, you're talking about methane within the explosive range. So that, you know, if methane were to get trapped under a sidewalk or a basement and you jackhammered into it, or if you were smoking near it, there could be an explosion.
Well, there was a fire in 1950, but nothing since. Are you surprised?
Well, in fact, I don't know that we are surprised. There, people have perhaps been cautious about home building in the area. There hasn't been a lot of home building. And we learned actually that there was a flare-up in 1976.
David, do people tell you that they have experienced health problems because of the spill?
You know, I think the reality is we don't know what the health effects have been, and that's part of what we need to force the industry to help us figure out is the truth of it.
And we'll go into this in more detail later in the show when Manona Rossel is my guest. She is an expert on toxins in the environment.
Okay. No, you know, the constituent asked me, what are we at risk? And what I tell them is, honestly, we don't know, because there's been no health study of this area to figure out what the effects have been. There hasn't been enough data on what the chemical exposure is in the homes for people to tell you what the risk may be. That's a big part of what we need. Why I helped with this suit to begin with was to get the information out in the public so my constituents would know what they're facing.
What has been the response of your constituents? This is a neighborhood that has remained relatively stable over the years until recently, when it's become a popular place for young people who are leaving Williamsburg because the rents have been going up. But largely it's been people who are less likely to complain. Isn't that true?
It's absolutely true. And, you know, you find this as an elected official, that in some ways the constituents that are most in need of government help are the ones that are least likely to come forward and seek it. So that means that we have an obligation, really, to proactively get out there ourselves.
Have people been coming to you over the years?
Certainly since in the last couple of years, since Riverkeeper has helped to publicize the existence of the spill so dramatically, I've had many more constituents tell me, you know, ask for information.
Basil, you said that it was really something that happened in 1979. So what did people think was going on between 1950 and 1979?
I'm not sure people knew what was going on.
Well, they smelled the oil. They knew that it wasn't else. They couldn't smell that in other parts of the city.
Perhaps they assumed that it was something wafting down the streets from the existing refinery, which didn't go offline until the 70s.
We're talking about a major spill. Were there any visible signs that there had been an oil spill? Did stuff come up from the ground?
As far as we know, the only visible signs were portrayed by the spill in the creek, the seepage into the creek. And that's really it. Unless people were out there seeing the creek itself, they never would have found out about this spill.
And they might not have made a connection between this oil depot a half a mile away
exactly.
And what was going on in the creek.
That's right.
You know, and Leonard, again, this was a really industrial neighborhood for most of the 20th century and really up until 10 years ago. And that there's also a huge sewage treatment plant. There are dozens of garbage transfer stations, which themselves can create funny smells, and moreover, the diesel trucks running back and forth to them throughout the day create a lot of fumes. So I think for a lot of folks, you know, it's hard to disentangle which one effect from the other.
Let's take a little break, and we'll come back with more. My guests are City Council Member David Yaske and Basil Segos, Chief Investigator for the environmental organization Riverkeeper. We're talking about the huge oil spill, much larger than Exxon Valdez, underground in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and dripping into Newtown Creek, the very polluted Newtown Creek. Stay with us. We're back with Basil Segos, who is chief investigator for the environmental organization Riverkeeper, and city council member David Yaski. And we have received a call from a Greenpoint resident who wants to know the exact part of Greenpoint that is affected by the toxins. Are there certain streets that are the boundaries of this spill?
The best way to think of this is to look at Kingsland Avenue, which is just near Greenpoint Avenue. The spill runs along Kingsland Avenue, sort of parallel to Newtown Creek, and then emerges in sort of a pear-shaped plume extending down to the BQE, with the general borders being Morgan Avenue and Newtown Creek itself.
Now, there have been many post 9/11 studies of the downtown area. What about Newtown Creek? Has the city's environmental infrastructure and its health infrastructure done a lot of research?
No. No, the city's been very quiet on the issue of Newtown Creek and its risk, the health risks posed by the spill itself and the sewage.
And we're talking about a lot of different administrations from, even if we forget about 50 to 79 when it was pretty bad, from 79 on, we've had any number of mayors. All of them having the same reaction, don't bother me with this?
Well, there was, to me, kind of disturbing comment that somebody at NYC 2012 made, which is the organization that was pushing for the Olympics here. And when we were looking for when the city was still a viable candidate to host the Olympics in 2012, and they put out a statement saying, if we get the Olympics, we'll be sure that Newtown Creek is cleaned up and that the area around there is cleaned up.
So now, they go sculling on it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the implication being, you know, that would be reason enough to care. Well, I think that the fact that New Yorkers live there and the fact this is our waterway is reason enough to care.
Well, so now we have a lawsuit. We're talking about 60 years after the spill, 25 years or so after it was rediscovered. Why now?
Well, because the wrong thing has been done. I mean, I have to explain this. There's a distinction. There's a Riverkeeper lawsuit, which Councilmember Yaski is now becoming a part of. And then there's the residents' lawsuit. Two different lawsuits, with the nexus being the spill. And our case, we brought our case quite simply because the state was failing to do its job. I mean, you asked a minute ago about what the city's been doing. Well, the city hasn't been doing anything really because they don't have the jurisdiction to act. The city could take political stances and force the state to act, but it's the state essentially that has dropped the ball in this case.
Does the federal government have any responsibility?
The federal government has oversight responsibility on the laws that govern our waterways and our health. But up until now, the federal government has actually been quiet on the state's implementation of these laws.
Yeah. I want to be very direct about this. It's the State Department of Environmental Conservation that has the authority to order ExxonMobil to clean up its spill. Now, what happened here is in what year?
In 1990,
the state did come in and issued a very general order saying, engage in cleanup efforts, you know, at your own pace and without any deadline, without any specific targets for when they have to have it cleaned up. And I think that is just was a real dereliction of duty on the part of the state.
That's a way of saying we don't care if you really do it or not, or you could just show up, make a little sign.
Absolutely. And as a result, there's been a cleanup proceeding at a very slow pace. Now, since Riverkeeper first brought its suit, one of the other oil companies involved, BP Amoco, has, I think, taken some very commendable steps here, and because there are several oil companies were active here. It appears that the bulk of the oil spilled from ExxonMobil, but honestly, we don't really know for sure. And BP Amoco has totally redone its recovery effort. I think they're recovering about four times the amount that they were previously. So that's borne a little fruit. But the truth is that the state government should come in and just order Exxon to clean it up and give them a timetable.
Well, we're talking about a lot of hyphenated companies here, ExxonMobil, BP, Amoco, Chevron, Texaco. So this oil spill or these oil spills occurred when they were very different entities. When you sue these companies, are you even suing anything that was like the perpetrator?
Well, Standard Oil was broken into, you know, everything that we know today, everything from Exxon and Mobil and Amoco and on and on. I mean, essentially what we're doing is suing Standard Oil for the original infraction and letting them sort out, you know, who's liable where.
Yeah, and various times in this history here, most of the major oil refiners had some sort of, whether it was just a holding station or more an active operation here in the Greenpoint area. And again, the likelihood is that many of them released some oil. But it does appear, from what we can tell, that the bulk of it is the entity now known as ExxonMobil.
In preparation for the case, has the law firm made any discoveries that surprised you, Councilman Yaski?
You know, this lawsuit was first really initiated about a year ago. And since then, what's happened is what you'd expect. The company has come in and said, we're fixing it. It's done. Don't worry. And they've said, look at this, look at that, look at this. And what it's taken about a year to go through all of these arguments and refute them and find that, in fact, there's still the oil there and it's still being recovered at only a snail's pace. I think now the suit is poised to move forward at a faster speed. But they have so far managed to avoid any court-ordered discovery, any producing of any documents like in the tobacco lawsuits that kind of clearly showed the bad actor.
And we're actually about to engage in discovery with this company. I mean, we essentially, since May of 2004 when we filed this case, our federal case, we've been in a period of suspended litigation, this time frame to essentially negotiate with the company on certain terms. That broke apart. That broke apart because the company was using this period essentially to delay the transfer of information to us that we thought would have perhaps resulted in a settlement best for the community and the creek. But that didn't happen. We're now going into the discovery phase of this litigation, and now we're joined by all of these other plaintiffs, you know, these perhaps dozens of Greenpoint residents in their own case, going after the exact same evidence. So I think at this point right now, we're poised to learn a lot more about this spill than we ever knew.
But if they're just saying that they're working on it and they're cleaning it up, are they also saying that they have a defensible position, that that what happened in 1950 was understandable and that they had every reason to ignore it until just a few years ago?
That position is indefensible. I mean, the federal law, in particular RCRA, which is the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, allows us to go back and litigate over spills or disposals of hazardous waste that happened well before the law existed. I mean, this is a 1972 law. We can go back to the 1950s if we need to, or before that, if people are still being harmed by this particular problem.
Right. And same thing with the seepage of oil into Newtown Creek. There's no excuse for that. They have to stop that from happening, period.
So it's likely they're going to lose this case. It just depends on what a judge or jury decide on how much they're going to lose.
I'm convinced that they will lose case, or put another way, you know, New Yorkers and Brooklynites will win this case. What I don't know is how long that will take. Lawyers can drag things out a very long time if they want to.
My guests are David Yaski, City Council member, and Basil Segos, Chief Investigator for the environmental organization Riverkeeper. This is WNYC 93.9 AME 20. We're online at WNYC.org. Now, Basil, this is not the only environmental lawsuit Riverkeeper has been involved with. Is this the biggest disaster in the area? I always thought it was General Electric dropping all of that stuff into the Hudson River.
Well, they destroyed their fair share of water quality in this area, and that remains, you know, 20 years after we got involved in that fight, that remains one of our biggest cases even till today. You know, we're still forcing the company in many ways, in the state and the feds, to take action there.
But the Hudson River, to some degree, has returned. The CPB levels are lower. We're seeing fish return to the Hudson. Is that likely in Newtown Creek?
You know, maybe 20 years from now, if we see fishermen on Newtown Creek on a regular basis and kids swimming, we'll be able to answer that question more appropriately.
But this, I wouldn't eat that fish.
The unfortunate thing is that people are eating these fish. You know, on a daily basis in the summer, you see people down at the end of Manhattan Avenue in Greenpoint pulling fish, pulling crabs out to eat. I mean, these are people that don't know what they're eating and are making the choice between smelly, dirty water and going hungry.
But shouldn't signs be posted warning people that this is an ecological disaster?
They absolutely should. And this is one service you can absolutely perform here, Leonard, is make sure people understand that they really shouldn't be eating fish pulled really from anywhere in New York Harbor, at least not feeding it to children or women of childbearing age. We've put up signs in many of the locations where this does happen, but not everybody pays attention to the signs.
You said you also pointed out that Greenpoint and Williamsburg have other things going on. All of the garbage trucks go through it. Does that add to the problem there? Is Greenpoint one of the most environmentally hazardous areas of the city that you know of?
There are a lot more environmental challenges there than in most parts of the city, to be sure. Our job is to kind of make progress on all these fronts, which we're doing bit by bit.
You have anything to add to that? Well, you only worry about waterways, don't
no.
you?
Well, maybe I'm only allowed to worry about waterways based on, you know, the fact that we're a water organization. But in fact, you know, we care about a lot more, and it's really communities around waterways that we strive to protect.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, you know, look, sure, it's absolutely a much more environmentally challenged area. We're now working out with the mayor a better plan for disposal of garbage that will deal with some of the waste transfer station problems. I think, you know, that though it will take time, we will get the oil companies to do what they should be doing on the spill. The big issue that will still be out there is sewage treatment, where the city does, as Basil said, every time there's rainfall really of any magnitude, we release raw sewage right into New York Harbor, a lot of that into Newtown Creek, and that's something that unfortunately the Bloomberg administration has not made progress on, and indeed recently got the state to give them a long extension of their deadline for dealing with the problem.
Although they are, as you said earlier, pushing waterfront development, there are some luxury condos that are scheduled to be put up in this area, aren't there?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that may help create some of the political constituency to force environmental progress.
Can this seep into the water system? The pipes aren't vulnerable, are they?
We don't think so. I mean, the unfortunate thing is that this aquifer you'd mentioned earlier, the water table in this area, has been totally destroyed based on this spill.
But people are not digging wells in New York City.
No, but the unfortunate thing about it is that the Brooklyn Queens Aquifer is often mentioned as a backup source of water supply in case the Catskill Delaware system, Croton system, goes offline for whatever reason.
I understand that Erin Brockovich is supporting this case. What's her role here?
She's not connected to Riverkeeper, but the citizens' lawsuit filed by Girardi and Keyes, they've essentially brought on Brockovich as a consultant. That's what I understand.
And she will give some money, I assume, because this is something that is near and dear to her heart.
Well, I think she's actually going to give more than just that. I believe if she does come on in this case, that she's going to serve as one of the attorneys representing these people.
Yeah, and I'm told that George Clooney will be playing Basil in the movie version. Is that correct? That may just be a rumor. That was just a joke.
We have a lot of calls coming in. You want to talk to a few people from the area?
Sure.
Could you put on your headphones, please? Our number here is, by the way, 212-433-9692. People, so far I've been asking the questions that they have been calling in with, like the oil seeping in from the drinking water via the pipes. But somebody else says that when he parks his car, there is this fine dust that settles on it, and he wonders whether this has anything to do with the oil spill or whether that's another environmental problem in the area. Do you know, David?
Well, there's an extraordinary amount of construction going on, and I don't know where he's parking his car, but that may well have something to do with the construction that's going on throughout Greenpoint.
Mm-hmm. Should we take a call or two? I only want to take calls from people who are from the Greenpoint area, and right now none of the calls are coming in from the Greenpoint area because I want to get very specific. Later when Monona is here, we will talk to people from other parts of the city because this is not unique to Greenpoint. It's just the worst situation in the city. Is that right, Basil? Are there other environmental problems occurring all around the area? What about New Jersey, Hoboken, which has its own waterfront problems?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we patrol the entire Hudson watershed, and we run along the New Jersey shoreline occasionally. And, you know, I can think of one spot right now where there is a seep coming out on a daily basis, you know, from a former Quanta Resources transfer station.
Congress recently passed legislation that requires study of the creek, among other polluted waterways. What does that legislation entail?
Well, essentially what Congressman Wiener did was go after the Coast Guard, get the Coast Guard back on the case. You remember the Coast Guard was still, you know, back in 1978, had found the spill and had documented it. Well, Wiener went back and actually brought the Coast Guard back onto the scene with this appropriation in the spending bill.
We'll take one call, and then later we'll bring in Monona Russell. This is Natalie from Greenpoint. Hi, Natalie. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been living there now, I think, about 14 years, and it's always been disturbing to me, the different odors and all the problems that we've had with the diesel trucks coming up our street, even though it says no through truck traffic and things of that nature. And I also have fine dust all over my car right by the BQE and assume that was the reason. And I've always been concerned. Now you're saying that there's a possibility that there could be methane building up in basements, and I'm just wondering, you know, what to do and how can I help to get something done about this? And also, can I join the lawsuit?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you right off the bat that you need to figure out where you live in relation to this spill.
I live on Apollo Street.
Okay.
Which is right by the entrance to the Kosciuszko Bridge.
I know just where you are, and in fact, that I guess the unfortunate thing is you are right on top of the spill.
Yeah.
So I encourage you to go to our website, riverkeeper.org, or the greenpointvxon.com, and find out more.
And Natalie, thank you for your call. We've gotten a number of calls from people who live somewhere in the proximity, like Long Island City and the like. Are they all affected as well, or is this specific to Greenpoint?
I believe the problem is specific to Greenpoint. I mean, we still don't know, as we've said, you know, what the health effects might be, you know, outside the spill area, you know, keeping in mind that this stuff gets into Newtown Creek and is transported with the tides. But I think until we know how far the spill has actually traveled in its dissolved phase, in other words, underneath Newtown Creek and into Queens, we can't really answer that question.
Yeah, I think in terms of the oil under the ground as it might affect homeowners, it's limited to Greenpoint. But, of course, folks in Long Island City do care deeply about the health of Newtown Creek.
We thank you both so much for being with us, City Council Member David Yaski and Basil Segos, Chief Investigator for the environmental organization Riverkeeper.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast of the Leonard LoPate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.